Good morning, everyone. Let's start with the opening chant. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning again. It's good to see everybody. Very nice indeed. So today I want to talk about awareness, Buddha awareness, and stability. Awareness, as we know, is the practice of attending fully. Another way of saying that is the practice of presence. It sounds pretty simple, I think, but simple, as we know, does not mean easy. Sometimes this is called mindfulness, and that's fine, but that term can also be confusing, as it's a word that's used in many different ways. So I prefer awareness, as it makes clear that this practice encompasses the whole of our being, mind, heart, body, everything. Smriti is a Sanskrit word from the root smara, which means remembrance, reminiscence, thinking of or upon, calling to mind, or simply memory. It's found in the ancient Vedic literature, so it way predates Buddhism. Another translation is recollection. In Pali, also an ancient Buddhist, also found in ancient Buddhist writings, and it's interesting that Pali is likely based on the language in which the Buddha actually taught. So, but Pali came later than Sanskrit, and in Pali, smriti is sati. So you will see that commonly used in Buddhist traditions that draw on Pali texts. So you can see that word a lot, sati. So they're the same word in two different languages. And they refer to this practice, this embodied practice of recollection, of awareness, of returning in a way. The benefits of practicing awareness are many. Practicing awareness can enrich our lives. We can see the depth and beauty of the world, actually hear what's going on, appreciate the loveliness of something, the feel of sunlight, the taste of our food, the smell of the ocean or the compost heap. And we can begin to appreciate even less obvious things. For example, if we're wiping a counter, we can appreciate and become intimate with, as we say, the counter and the rag that we're using. Even the simple things can become fascinating when we attend in this way. Even the quirkiness of our own minds and the changes in our bodies. With the practice of awareness, we also become more aware of hard things. The power of grief, the acuteness of loneliness, the patterns of our minds and hearts that hijack us into false perceptions of ourselves and others. As Pema Chodron has said, we say we want things to become more vivid, but everything becomes more vivid. So the question then becomes, what do we do with all of this? How is this a fruitful practice? One way is to turn our relationship, our awareness to the relationships, the context of everything. To see living connections and know that that is our fundamental reality. So we put in context awareness of what challenges us, what inspires us. When we put into context that which challenges us, it's not debilitating. It is liberating. We come alive with all of it. And this orientation transforms our experience and our actions, the personal, ethical, relational basis of our lives becomes suffused with the spirit of care, and wisdom grows. Context is essential for every aspect of our lives. Context is community, relationship, the support and connection we experience when we broaden our view, and subsequently our mind and hearts broaden and include it all. When we attend to context, we place our awareness in the broad field of our lives. And we learn how important it is to attend to how we attend, to what we attend, and to what end. Without that, we may become calmer or more aware of what is happening, but we do not change the root delusions that are the source of our suffering. In fact, with that kind of ungrounded awareness, we can just become more skillful at the ways that we're unskillful. So we ask, what is the context in which we operate? In other words, who do we think we are in the deepest sense? And what do we think is happening in the world? What is our aim, our intention? We stop and feel the quality of awareness and its impact on our minds and hearts. Kindness, aggression, avarice. What's present? What colors our attention? And what is the root of our intention? We pay attention to the results of our awareness in the wider scheme of things. Is it helpful or not? Not just to us, but to others as well. Basically, we explore deeply who we are and how we function with others. And we make clear-eyed choices about how we practice awareness. We cultivate kindness and connection. And I want to say it's not unusual, I've said this before, for kindness to be confused with niceness or being good. That is not accurate. In fact, it's a trap and an avoidance. If we define kindness as niceness, we avoid the hard work of the discipline of kindness by plastering a facade of niceness over our words and actions. Or we tell ourselves that kindness, which means niceness, is weak. It's lesser. And we escape the hard work of kindness by telling ourselves that aggression or harshness is tougher or more real. Either way, if we do that, we do not grow in wisdom and compassion. We don't practice kindness to be good. We do it because this is what is liberating for ourselves and others. This is an important element of our awareness. And with it, we can see more clearly. As we see clearly, we cultivate a primary orientation for ourselves. Ultimately, our intention and our practice is guided by our vow to wake up so that we and all beings can realize the Buddha way, can be liberated from suffering. This we know as the way of the Bodhisattva, the being dedicated to awakening for ourselves and others. If we bring awareness to our lives in this way, we can see how we're asleep, and we can choose to gently and thoroughly cultivate clarity and devotion to the Bodhisattva way. In the Dharma, we speak of bodhicitta. In the Dharma, we speak of bodhicitta. Bodhi means awakening, and citta is mind or consciousness. So bodhicitta is the mind of awakening. This is the mind of awareness. This is the root of the practice of awareness. We can think in terms of cultivating bodhicitta, and that's a very good thing to do. But we must remember that bodhicitta, this mind of awakening, is the basis of our practice. It is the impulse that drew us to practice in the first place. It is very deep in us. In fact, it is central. Perhaps the most central thing in our lives. The wisdom that calls us, reminds us, draws us into the true nature of who we are. To live our lives with this awareness is, in Japanese, doshin, the mind shin of the way, do. To live our lives with this awareness is wise, compassionate, and connected. I've reminded us of this before, but the Greek root of compassion has the sense of walking beside someone as support. It's often translated as compassion, suffering with, and that's great. But if you're just suffering with, and you don't have a clear eye of where you're going, and you don't have the strength to walk it, you cannot support the other. So we care. We have a sense of walking with the suffering of others, and we see clearly. If we don't, we wander off into the darkness often and can sink into despair with the person that we're hoping to support. So walking beside, having a clear eye, knowing that wisdom and compassion are not different things. Our first impulse to practice is full to the brim of these qualities. And we cultivate the ability to be guided by them in our day-to-day lives by recalling our intentions and reminding ourselves of what we are up to, paying attention and returning. So, again, I want to say this is cultivating, but it's also returning. This is a crucial dimension of our awareness. We are not moving toward anything. We are being recalled to what is already present. Our practice is all about remembering Buddha, our true nature. This is very concrete. It's not romantic or abstract at all. In this moment, what is happening? Who are we right now? How are we in relation right now? The practice of awareness is returning to the subject that is us in the deepest sense. When we return to the locus of awareness, we remember ourselves back to the silence at our core. The limitless depth and dynamic breadth that is beyond thinking. This cannot be known as an object. Any object we come up with is a designation of our mind. That's not a problem. We're going to create designations. We're going to create all kinds of things. But that is only one dimension of our lived experience. It is not the center. In a sense, there is a mystery to this. And there's no mystery at all. It's as plain as the nose on your face. In every aspect of our lives, we are recalled to the concrete reality that each moment is a moment of practice, a moment of awakening. There is no time or place that is outside of practice. With this spirit, we remember ourselves and we engage with a beneficial spirit, a beneficial spirit and clear and caring actions arise naturally when we come back to who we are. And in this awareness, we are returning. Another way of talking about this practice is Buddhanasmriti. also called Buddhasati, recollection of the Buddha. The Buddha Anusmriti is the first of the Anusmriti, Anusati in Pali. Others include awareness of Dharma, Sangha, virtue, and generosity. So what we're talking about is, what are we aware of? And how do we practice this awareness? This Buddha awareness is an ancient practice that evolved over time, starting with recollection of the life and attributes of the Buddha. It led to practices of visualization and to reciting the name of Buddha. In Pure Land Buddhism, the recitation is of the name of Amida Buddha. And just as an aside, you might find this interesting, I did. I heard a paper a few years back, an academic paper that discussed the history of Nembutsu, which is the recitation of the name of Buddha. The history of Nembutsu of Shakyamuni Buddha, not Amida Buddha. And the history of this recitation in Soto Zen. And it's interesting that there was a clear point at which Nembutsu practice of Shakyamuni Buddha was de-emphasized in favor of taking the precept, Jukai. And I immediately thought that there's probably political aspects to this, and also sectarian aspects, and also related to the maintenance of clerical power. You don't have to ask anybody permission to recite the name. But receiving the precepts is different. So anyway, we're humans and we do this religious thing humanly. So today, I'll emphasize the practice of remembrance, remembering the Buddha. Recalling the virtues of the Buddha, or the brilliance, or the encompassing nature of the awakened mind and heart. Recalling ourselves to that which is most fundamental. So I want to make sure that we understand that we are not talking about an entity that exists apart from us. Dogen is very clear about this. The founder of Soto Zen, very clear about this. When we recall and return to Buddha, we return to what is already present. We return to the world, to who we are, and to what we rely on. Kosho Uchiyama Roshi wrote about this standard chant of Pure Land Buddhism, Namu Amida Butsu. And he understood this to mean, I practice Butsu, returning Namu to the totality of heaven and earth. I practice returning to the totality of heaven and earth. Many, if not most, Pure Land Buddhists would likely not agree with this interpretation. But what Uchiyama Roshi is telling us is that meditation of the remembrance of Buddha is recalling ourselves to this world in the richest and most supportive way. He wrote this poem called The Heart of Nembutsu. I eat food from the whole heaven and earth. I drink water from the whole heaven and earth. I live the life of the whole heaven and earth, pulled by the gravity of the whole heaven and earth. I become pure and clear, one with the whole heaven and earth. The whole heaven and earth is where I return. Let me just read that through to you once more. The Heart of Nembutsu. I eat the food from the whole heaven and earth. I drink water from the whole heaven and earth. I live the life of the whole heaven and earth. Pulled by the gravity of the whole heaven and earth, I become clear, pure and clear, one with the whole heaven and earth. The whole heaven and earth is where I return. So, in particular, when we're in distress, when we feel lost or fearful, this practice is actually recommended as a counterpoint to fear. And when our confidence in the way is weak, we remember the Buddha. We return to awareness. We remember that we are of the nature of awakening. And in that moment, we are supported and sustained. There's a text called The Awakening of Faith in the Mahayana, which Reverend Ryuki is going to tell us about in a few weeks. But this tells us that taking up such a practice supports the emergence of confidence. Confidence. So think about it. To practice remembering that you are not different from the capacity to fully realize the Buddha way, even if you don't believe it in that moment, changes us. It opens us up to the possibility of confidence that extends beyond what we think or what we don't think about who we are. And this is available, as I said, anytime, anywhere. You don't have to be sitting on a cushion. You can be running to catch a bus. You can be sitting in a living room with your cranky uncle. You can be, doesn't matter, everywhere. Just stop. Just breathe. Just remember. Just cultivate awareness. If we recall ourselves to this, we can be nourished and inspired by it. We can rely on this. We can be confidere, means confidence is confidere, with fidelity. This is relying. We can find solace in this. We find stability. A stability that's deep and strong and flexible. And that includes when we fall apart, when we're crushed in a moment, when the tears flow, or when we feel we're incapable. This stability extends even into including that. I think this is a trying time right now, and finding stability is key. This practice, this whole practice I've been talking about, is very close in meaning to the quality that Dogen describes in the Tenzo Kyokan of Daishin, great mind. The character Dai means great or vast. The character Shin in this case means heart, mind, consciousness. Just as in another aside, there's another character that also is pronounced Shin that means confidence. And there's some interesting connections there, but not for today. Daishin implies a quality of consciousness that is vast and great, inclusive. It's not something large that pushes smaller things out of the way. It is something that will accept and include everything. It is a steady source of warmth and energy, not a flickering flame, but a steady glow. It is like the ocean. By its very nature, the ocean does not exclude anything. Great and stable, even as it is dynamic and always changing. Or sometimes we talk about a mountain, settled and stable. Its being never separate from the clouds that come and go, the storms, the creatures that live upon it, including everything in its mountainness. When we practice returning, recalling, recollecting ourselves, remembering ourselves to the reality of Buddha, we enter and are supported by that ocean. We know that we are not different from that ocean. We know that we are not different from mountainness. Whether we actually experience it in that moment or not, Daishin becomes real. And then we lose it, and have the opportunity to return again and know that we can return again. This is confidence. This is settledness. It's not settledness that's calm all the time. It's the settledness of a dynamic system. And as we go about our days, we can practice this very concretely, very simply, wherever we are. This remembrance and this awareness. Okay? Let me pause, stop the recording.